This is Wade Rathke. You know what that means. It's Friday. It's 9 to 9:30 Central Time. We're on Wade's World. Every week, we interview people from all around the world on KABF, WAMF, and the Affiliated Media Foundation Movement's network of increasingly voluminous low-power FM stations around the country. We're live streaming at www.kbf.org, and the podcast will be available by Monday. Today, you know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Katherine Johnson, who's a national organizer, field organizer for Public Citizen. And we're talking about something everybody is reading about in the news, and hopefully not too many people are scratching your head, but what is this Trans-Pacific Partnership and what's it going to do to us? Welcome to Wade's World, Katherine.
Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you because this is a puzzle. We all say trade, what the heck? Those of us who are in unions, we know maybe we should be worried about this. President Obama's been beating the drums on this darn thing. Give us the short story first about Public Citizen and what it is, and then let's jump into the TPP.
Absolutely. Well, Public Citizen is a nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C. We were actually founded by Ralph Nader in 1971, and we work for consumer protection, essentially. And they realized several years ago that a lot of the advances that they were making in consumer protection were being undermined by trade policy. And so they created a Global Trade Watch division of Public Citizen, and that's where I work.
Excellent. And NAFTA we know about, and people are still wondering what in the world NAFTA did for us. What is this? Is there a brief way to introduce the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and then we'll get into what the horrors and helpfulness might be?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned NAFTA, because we refer to this often as NAFTA on steroids.
Exactly.
And it'll have a lot of the same pernicious effects that NAFTA did, but on a much bigger scale. Because the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's a trade agreement that's being negotiated right now. It's gone through about 5 years of negotiation, and it covers 12 countries, including the United States, all along the Pacific Rim. And it's actually the largest trade agreement in the history of the world. It would cover 40% of the global economy. So that's part of why we call it NAFTA on steroids. It covers so much more of the world, including actually Mexico and Canada.
And I noticed that, because you hear Trans-Pacific, you think maybe we're lending a hand out to see if we can grab Japan or something, but the old NAFTA buddies, Mexico and Canada, are right up in this, aren't they?
Absolutely, along with Japan, various other countries in Asia, a couple countries in Latin America. So it's really a large part of the world. We also call it NAFTA on steroids because of the incredibly large sort of thematic area that it covers. We often actually don't refer to it as a trade agreement because so little of it actually covers anything related to what we normally think of as trade.
Huh.
So there's 29 chapters in the agreement, which are, I should mention, incredibly secret. Members of Congress can only read this agreement if they go into a secret basement room in the Capitol and leave all of their note-taking materials behind and swear never to tell anybody what they've read.
Where is Edward Snowden when we need him now?
Actually, Julian Assange has helped us out quite a bit with WikiLeaks, that what we have seen of the Trans-Pacific Partnership is because of leaks through WikiLeaks.
Interesting, okay.
And so what we know is that it covers an incredibly large number of topics, including, for example, internet freedom. This agreement could overturn the net neutrality achievements that we've made over the last few months. It will affect our food quality as the standards of imported food are lowered and the ability of the USDA to monitor and test food as it's coming in. It also covers patent and copyright laws, which will be devastating for a lot of the developing countries that are entering into it, as the patents on medicines, for example, and life-saving medicines, medicines for HIV/AIDS, medicines for malaria, cancer, anything that still has a patent, the patent will be extended to 12 years.
And that's just within these countries, or?
Just signatories, yeah, just the 12 countries.
But we should be worried that it might spread.
Absolutely. Other countries can join once it's negotiated and finalized. So where we are right now, there's another piece of
this. Pandora's box, it sounds like.
It absolutely is. It's like if you wanted to take everything progressives hate and put it in one agreement, that's what Obama and the other negotiators have done with this agreement. It's incredible.
So part of the issue is obviously, and you've already hinted at that, there's no transparency here at all, is there?
No, it's incredibly secretive. It's more secretive than any other trade negotiation in the U.S.
And why is that? Is that because this really smells that bad? What's their excuse for that?
Their excuse is that you don't tip your hand when you're negotiating. But really, our negotiating partners...
In the land of D.C. leaks? I mean, how do they even not... laugh at themselves on that, but go ahead.
Well, yeah, it is ridiculous. And like I said, it's more secretive even than other trade agreements. The real reason that this is super secret is because if the public saw it, they would never agree to it.
Well, that's sort of sobering right there. And part of the reason is not just because of patents and drug things and everything else. People are worried about sovereign rights from what you can hear.
Absolutely. There's a provision called the Investor-State Dispute Settlement Provision.
Better repeat that.
We've got
some slow learners and listeners out there.
Investor-State Dispute Settlement, ISDS.
Investor-State Dispute Settlement, okay.
And what it is corporations from the member countries of this agreement can sue governments who are also part of the agreement for expected loss of profits based on laws democratically passed by the member countries. And this isn't...
expected loss of profit.
Exactly. Hmm. So, this we've seen, and these cases go before a private tribunal of three trade attorneys who cycle through being the attorneys for the corporations and being the judges themselves. And there's no, it's not through our normal court system at all. It's completely outside of that. And so we've seen ISDS has been a part of other trade agreements as well. And so we've seen attacks through that on public health laws, for example. There's laws to reduce smoking in Uruguay and New Zealand that have been attacked. And they've been ordered to pay millions of dollars to Philip Morris, basically.
For loss of profits for Philip Morris.
Yep, exactly.
Wow, doesn't that take your breath away, literally, I'm afraid.
Yeah, unfortunately, literally. We've also seen environmental provisions, for example, attacked under these same provisions. And what the administration keeps saying is that these tribunals can't force a country or a state or counties, which can also be sued, to change their laws, which is true. What these tribunals can do is order those governments to pay millions and millions of dollars to these corporations.
And given how broke-ass most cities, counties, parishes, and a lot of states are around the United States, that could be devastating.
Exactly.
Now, Senator Elizabeth Warren out of Massachusetts has recently been a freedom fighter in this issue, and she's been arguing, I believe, and you can correct me, Catherine, that one problem here is that it could erode the supposed protections we're still trying to get on financial institutions. What's
exactly
the story there?
Yeah, there. Again, it's hard to know because of the secrecy around the agreement, but she has read it.
Right. In secret. Yeah.
In secret. Okay. Can't tell us what's in it.
No. I do it now. Must have spent some days on 29 chapters or whatever.
I know.
Saying.
It's a huge agreement. But what she has told us is that, yes, a lot of the most important provisions under the Dodd-Frank Act that she and Obama and others fought so hard for could be undermined by this agreement.
Letting financial institutions recreate the same recession, depression.
And take those risky bets that they did on bad loans with our money, with, regular, everyday people's money.
No, we don't want to get too far into banks because they're already proving themselves to be criminal conspiracies. But that's another issue Wage World is often dealing with. But we're talking today to Catherine Johnson, who's a national organizer for Public Citizen, publiccitizen.org. Ralph Nader originally founded in 71. And she's heavily involved in trying to tell people about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Now, you're going everywhere, aren't you, trying to spread the word here?
Absolutely, because this is a key moment in this fight. And I'll tell you why. As I said, if the public sees this agreement, they would never agree to it. It would never get through Congress and the normal process of amendments, of the filibusters and all of that. So to be able to pass this agreement, Congress first has to pass something called Fast Track Trade Promotion Authority.
And didn't they just pass that?
Well, the Senate did.
The Senate
passed it, which we expected, and it was a surprisingly close vote. The Senate's
already... Well, the President lost in the beginning.
There was a filibuster as they sort of as the Democrats got a few more concessions out of the Republicans there. But unfortunately, it did eventually pass, and now they're ready and rearing to bring it up in the House. So Paul Ryan has said that he hopes to bring this up next week. Now, we know it won't actually happen next week because they don't have the votes, because of the amazing organizing that's been going on across the country by unions, environmental organizations, internet freedom organizations, food safety groups. Because of all of that organizing, we have a majority that are against Fast Track, against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but we're facing off against the Chamber of Commerce, the president and the full weight of his authority, as well as the Republican leadership.
And isn't it funny that we find ourselves having to count on the Republicans finally for something here?
Yeah, well...
What in the world? I mean, where are we now, Alice?
It's crazy. But I think part of it is I think a lot of people have realized that the inequality that we're seeing in the United States is incredibly damaging and dangerous and is hurting.
Part of it has to do with trade.
Absolutely. And so we're seeing a lot of Tea Party Republicans who are truly populist and don't want to see the loss of jobs, the erosion of wages that we know that we'll see under this agreement, like we've seen under past agreements. And so we have most of the Democratic Party in the House and about 50 or more Republicans who have united together to stop this.
And how about agricultural interest? I know on other trade agreements there have been issues in NAFTA that people have complained about, and there are things like, you know, being able to say that beef came from the U.S. is now not going to be possible. Where are they coming down on TPP?
Well, it depends. The big agricultural interests are, for the most part, for it. They look at Japan as a really juicy market that has really high trade protections right now that they would love to export to. However, small family farms are solidly on our side against Fast Track and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The National Family Farm Coalition, for example, we work really closely with. Because just like NAFTA devastated family farms in Mexico and in the United States, the Trans-Pacific Partnership will as well.
The labor has been big on this. For years, they've been accused of being protectionist around trade, but they've been a leader in this fight. Yet, I read the other day that there were the administration was trying to categorize some unions as more evil than others. They were saying Mary Kay Henry with the service employees they saw as more of a moderate on this issue. Rich Trumka with the AFL-CIO they saw as a lathering wild man here. What's the real story in the East Coast on this?
Well, the real story is that the labor movement has been amazingly unified in ways that we haven't seen in anything for decades. We, for example, a letter came out against Fast Track with all of the major U.S. unions signed on, people that hadn't worked together since the divisions in the AFL-CIO, for example, years ago. And so what the administration is trying to do is your basic divide and conquer, to try to pick off some of the unions. They try to do it with the local unions as well.
Sure.
I've talked to some of the, for example, the presidents of the state federations of the AFL that say, you know, I got a call from the White House. They said not to follow Trumka, do my own thing, and you know.
And I hate to admit it, these state fed guys get so few calls from the White House, they probably...
No, they're standing firm. But
yeah.
No, they do. You know what they're saying? Talk to Richard Trumka. They're standing firm and unified.
Good. And something like the comments on the service employees, I'm sure they've signed against TPP as well, haven't they?
Thank goodness they have. That's my union.
Well, you know, I ran a local for them for 25 years. I was on the international board for 8. So I follow, you know, them flapping around SEIU pretty closely. So what are the real chances here? What do people need to do, do you think? Are there more issues that people need to know more about?
Absolutely, and we cover all of these issues. If you go to our website, expose.thetpp.org, we talk about many of the issues that I've talked about, plus all of the other things that the TPP covers in really simple language for activists and other interested people to read. We also there have ways that people can take action, because right now it's going to be crucial that everybody call their representative, no matter who they are, and tell them to vote against Fast Track.
And you're finding even representatives with very progressive records. I know we were talking earlier about Representative Cedric Richmond from New Orleans, who has a very good record on labor. They're still not sure what they're doing here. Are you hearing things like that from places like New Orleans?
Yeah, actually, that's why I'm here. That I have heard what a wonderful friend Representative Richmond has been to labor here. And, you know, how much progressive
we have
like
so
him.
Damn few friends. I don't
exactly.
want to go into that.
Exactly. That's what everybody tells me. And yet, he's been unwilling to say whether or not he's going to screw over his union friends and constituents or whether he's going to stand with them. And so, and he's one of a handful. He's one of a couple of dozen Democrats who haven't been willing to take a stand.
And where are you finding others that are similar hotspots?
So we, there are various people who are really in favor of free trade agreements and so are, you know, on principle wanting to pass Fast Track and TPP. There are others that I'm afraid, I think they're just waiting for the president to offer the highest price that he can. You know, that have made it really clear they're just waiting for the right handout, the right giveaway to go with the president. But we've also seen immense pressure on the Congressional Black Caucus, asking them to stand with the president. But that pits these representatives against their constituents.
It's such a sophisticated issue that, and there sound like there's such a Pandora's box of problems with this. How do you pick those things that most resonate with the public in terms of inspiring the kind of mass opposition you need here, Catherine?
Well, luckily we've been doing this for several years.
Oh, absolutely.
This wasn't a surprise, neither for the unions, the environmental groups, or for public citizen. And so we know from experience and from polling what really resonates with people. And it's jobs. People recognize that middle-class people, working-class people, are losing jobs and seeing stagnation or, you know, loss of wages. But some of the other issues that really resonate are food safety, for example.
Talk to us about food safety, because that's this whole GMO thing that a lot of people get confused about as well.
Well, there's a couple of concerns around food safety. One is the GMO issue, mm-hmm. that the Trans-Pacific Partnership could ban certain labeling. Now, it's already under the WTO rules. They just ruled that the country of origin labeling on beef and pork violates WTO rules, and we're likely to see those rules changed.
Doesn't make my friends in Montana happy, I'll tell you that. I go there every summer for a bit, and I've worked with the organization of farmers and ranchers out there for 45 years, and they are not happy about any of this, as you can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. The other big concern, though, is that we already, the USDA can only test a really small proportion of the food coming into the United States.
Right.
And there's certain foods that are pretty easy to get to have contaminated. Shrimp, for example, because of how they're grown, where they're grown, really pick up a lot of contamination. And Vietnam and Malaysia are both big shrimp-producing countries, and they're members of the TPP. So we could see a huge influx of shrimp and other seafood from
and
there.
And that's already a huge issue, I know, in the Gulf Coast, and particularly in Louisiana, as you know, where people have tried to argue around labeling for shrimp here, that in Louisiana we're worried about whether or not the Vietnamese shrimp is outnumbering our Louisiana shrimp.
Well, you should also worry about if it's going to make you sick.
Well, you know, they're just, there you go. Just, you know, if you run out of things to worry about, that's certainly true, too. And it just would seem that the shipping alone would make that not as viable a financial proposition. Vietnam's a long way to move shrimp safely.
But Vietnam has a minimum wage of 60 cents an hour. So
it's hard to compete with that.
It is, and we certainly don't want American workers having to compete with that, and with a country that doesn't allow any labor unions.
Well, that's a whole other issue, but, I mean, an irony that probably goes unspoken is how many Vietnamese shrimp fishermen we have in the Gulf Coast now. So that's a curious problem right there. So we have health issues, we have food issues. How do you see this internet thing you mentioned? Obviously, as you said, we just recently finally caught a break from the FCC, which usually bends over backwards to protect the companies, and this time claims they're doing something for net neutrality, and this could unravel that as well?
It could, actually. It could ban laws or regulations like net neutrality. And again, because of the super secret nature, it's hard to know, but that's definitely a risk. The other thing is, if you remember the SOPA and PIPA Acts, they were about online, the use of of user-generated content online and the way that websites would have to monitor all of their content. And we had the big internet blackouts. We had Google and other websites black out their sites because they said, we can't operate if these...
I know they fought for a change. They fought very aggressively against those.
Absolutely. And the TPP could actually force regulations like that on us without the democratic debate that we had last time when it was done through a normal congressional process.
And so why aren't they offering to try to compromise on these issues as they're brought up in the negotiations? Is it already a done deal that you suspect that they now can't modify? Or?
Well, the TPP is largely finalized. The negotiations have been going on for over 5 years. And so most of those issues are already set in stone as far as the negotiations go. There's a few sticky issues with especially Canada and Japan around agriculture and cars that are still being worked out. But the truth is, the reason all of these things are included in the TPP is the advisors, those that actually have access to these negotiations are the largest corporations in the United States. Those are the trade advisors for the U.S. Trade Representative. That's who's writing these agreements.
And that's scary as well. We're talking to Katherine Johnson, who's a national organizer with Public Citizen, the long-standing consumer advocacy organization dating back to 1971. And what we've been talking about is what's under the covers here with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So we've got a million problems. What are you seeing around the country? I know we were talking about some of the states you're working in nationally, Katherine. What are you seeing are the most effective protests and actions people are taking to try to slow this fast track down?
Well, there's a couple different tactics. The unions have actually, AFL and others, have promised to not give any PAC money to any politicians until this fight is over, with the implicit threat that anybody that votes for fast track won't have union support, financial support.
It used to be one day, many, many years ago, we could say we just won't vote for them. Now we heard them worse, maybe by saying we won't give them money, it looks like.
Well, and that's, you know, that's what really influences elections here.
No, unfortunately, that's the way too many of these things go.
However, what has been most effective has been creating local coalitions on the ground in each of the swing districts of consumer protection, internet freedom, environmental, food safety, and labor groups on the ground working together to pressure their representatives and organize people. And we have these now set up all over the country. They're pretty heavily on the West Coast because we have various people in California, Oregon, and Washington who won't stand with their constituents and are either for fast track or haven't yet said how they'll vote.
And is that because they think they're going to get more trade from on the Pacific side?
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, my home state, Washington, Boeing thinks that they'll see a boon. And so we saw both of our senators from Washington vote for fast track, unfortunately.
So they may lose the Export-Import Bank, but they're hoping for the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
That was actually, though, it was the Export-Import Bank that sealed the deal.
We stumbled onto something here.
That Mitch McConnell, we watched this drama unfold on the Senate floor. Maria Cantwell there, senator from Washington State, really wanted a vote on the Export-Import Bank. And she wouldn't vote yes on fast track until Mitch McConnell got John Boehner to promise that the Export-Import Bank bill would come to the floor in June, basically. And we watched her in furious negotiation on the Senate floor and then turn around and give the thumbs up to the vote counter. And that was the 60th vote that they needed.
Wow, that's some drama, but
D.C.'s not all boring.
No. No matter what, we think it's frightening, but boring never.
No.
So, you know, when the president is caught in these situations where he has Congress trying to renegotiate agreements with Iran, now he has, you know, obviously huge opposition on this Trans-Pacific Partnership. You mentioned earlier that some people in Congress are likely waiting for the quid pro quo, waiting to see what kind of deal they can make with the president. Is there a real, you know, in his early years, he wasn't getting very good marks for his ability to cajole and lure and seduce congressmen to vote for him. Is he getting better at this? Is this something we need to watch more carefully?
I think he's getting better at it, but it's just showing a much bigger willingness to do it, essentially. He's had extensive meetings with various different caucuses, you know, and invitations to the White House to meet with him. Because unfortunately, we've seen him throw his weight behind this in a way that we haven't seen him be active on any other issue, not even his signature healthcare achievements, not immigration reform,
really? Wow.
Not anything seems to have been as important to him as this. And it baffles all of us why that is, why he is
good,
so passionate.
Good, because I was about to ask, why?
Everybody
in the heck
asks
is that,
and
happening?
We just, you know, it's a mystery.
You know, and people keep talking about legacy, but you don't want your legacy to be bad, and, you know, Clinton and others are still taking a beating for some of what they did on trade, and it's going to be an issue as people get ready for the 2016 election. So, unfortunately, Catherine and I are left scratching our heads here on Wage World, wondering what in the world the president is doing, making this quite such a signature issue for him. So we have coalitions bursting out around the country. You and your team are fanning out, trying to get into districts to talk to people about the issues so that maybe they can put the pressure on. You know, you hate to just tell people to like on Facebook or sign a petition. So what do we really need people to do in our last couple of minutes here?
I would say the best thing you can do is drop by your representative's office. Go in, either call and try to make a meeting, and often, you know, they'll meet, somebody on the staff will meet with just about any constituent that wants to, or if they won't give you a meeting, first ask to meet with a representative, especially if you have a group. But you know what, if not, just drop by, say hello, bring some handwritten letters maybe from your friends, neighbors, colleagues, whoever. If you can't do that, and it's hard for a lot of people during working hours to do that, give them a call. We have some people that call their representative daily or weekly, however often they can, just to remind them that, you know, this is an issue that matters to us. And if you go to the website that I mentioned, exposethetpp.org, we have various different tools that you can use to take action there.
Exposethetpp.org.
Exactly.
Okay, and there are probably petitions there, there are probably God knows what.
Emails, ways to email, ways to call, ways to email.
And does email work at all in y'all's experience with representatives? They really count that like they count letters, or
if
what?
You get enough. It's, you know, I would
the
say...
The numbers are just amazingly large, though, from what I read.
We are. I mean, we've got some of the biggest online groups working with us on this. Move On, for example, Credo, Electronic Frontier Foundation, Fight for the Future, so many, and then, you know, a whole bunch of smaller ones as well. So we've generated tens of thousands of emails, probably close to hundreds of thousands by this point. But you know what? Calls are better. Dropping in the office is even better. Tweets, though, are also really good because they're public. Tweet at your representative. Let them know how you feel
about
it. You
almost hate to say tweet somebody on the radio, but yes, people are using Twitter, and if they're counting it and they're responding, I noticed the president even got on Twitter last week or so. Mainly talking about the NBA championships, but what the heck? I mean, you know, at least we're engaging in some way. We've been talking to Catherine Johnson of publiccitizen.org for the last half hour about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and her message is very clear. This is troubling. There are a lot of issues, almost whoever you are, wherever you're working. In the sound of our voice, you may have something you need to be worried about, and as clearly you need to worry about the fact that you don't really know, because this has not been a transparent process. Whenever you have to thank Julian Assange, held up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London for the last 1,000-plus days for the WikiLeaks ability to get some of this out in public, you know it's a problem. Catherine, repeat that website again and just give people a final nudge to do the right thing here.
ExposeTheTPP.org. Please, this is the moment. This fight could be over in just a few weeks. If we're lucky, a couple of months. But this is the moment. If you care about trade, if you care about wages, inequality, food safety, internet freedom, human rights in other countries, that's what we didn't talk about, is the impact in other countries. But if you care about any of those things, go call your representative, drop by their office, get involved.
And call your representative no matter who they are, even if you think they're for the right thing here, because they probably need an atta girl or an atta boy just to be able to stand up against what Catherine and PublicCitizen.org says is going to be a massive lobbying effort from the chamber, from businesses, from about everybody else. I know on Wage World, it seems like we're stuck in Washington here. We talked recently to the executive director of Washington Can about their hospital campaigns. Catherine says she's from Washington State. This must be where freedom's breaking out. Next week on Wage World, we're talking to John Sellers about the fight in the Seattle area to try to do something with Shell and others that want to drill for oil in the Arctic Ocean. Sellers has been part of Ruckus and a million other groups, Greenpeace, and they've done some very creative things to try to turn the wheels on that one around. This has been Wage World. You can catch the podcast on Monday. We'll be on next Friday, 9 to 9:30 Central Standard Time. We are live streaming at www.kbf.org. Thank you. We'll see you next week.